Attention listeners, we're excited to announce that AfterSight will be moving to our new office on March 26th. As we make this transition, our services will be down most of the day. We apologize for any inconvenience, but truly appreciate your understanding as we start this new chapter. Thank you for listening to AfterSight.
You're listening to an AINC original podcast. We believe you don't have to do life without a compass. Let us be your guide on this amazing journey. Welcome to Navigating Life with Vision Loss.
Hello, and thank you for joining Navigating Life with Vision Loss. I am your host, Kim Wardlow. We are continuing today with a two-part series with Melissa Cermak from MSU Denver. And she is with the Access Center there and is going to be sharing some more specific information about as you're transitioning and if you're a person with vision loss going into college. If you didn't hear last week's episode, definitely tune into that too, because there was a lot of great information and even talking about looking ahead and visiting colleges and schools before in resource centers, looking into what accommodations and resources are provided as you're trying to make your choice of where you would like to attend. So definitely tune in for that if you didn't hear that last week. Melissa, thank you for joining us again this week. I know you said that over the years you've kind of developed a bit of a specialty in the area of working with students that have vision loss or other vision issues.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Absolutely. It was not when I started in the Access Center, I don't think I had worked with a student with vision loss and had to learn a lot about how students were accessing content and kind of get up to speed. Now I feel like I'm pretty confident in knowing what students' needs are, or at least being able to ask the right questions when it comes to possible accommodations. But yeah, it's definitely been a journey, but definitely a student population I really enjoyed working with.
Well, I know you provided a lot of information last week, but as we dive a little bit deeper into specifics, could you walk us through the process for a student with vision loss as they're working with your office, with the Access Center, and kind of as they're coming in? As I mentioned, we talked last week, the earlier the better to make contact with your office or the equivalent at their school.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that was definitely, I think, a theme of the last conversation was being as proactive and good with communication as possible. And so we had talked about as students are really starting to narrow down on a school or college they want to attend, it's really great to reach out and visit with them and let them know that's your intent. You know, you might be still waiting to be admitted. And so sometimes that's the question, right? It's like, oh, have you already been admitted? It's really helpful for the offices kind of helping you to think about what the timeline might be to kind of have a student start. So, you know, for our incoming students, and let's assume kind of a fall start, we like to meet with them, you know, particularly students with vision loss, I would say the earlier the better. So, you know, typically it's the summer before they would be starting, but sometimes faculty are a little bit more accessible in that spring semester before the fall. So we start to see some of our students in even March or April who have been admitted or reaching out to say, hey, I'm a student who's blind. I'll be taking classes in the fall, because for us that allows us a little bit more opportunity to make sure everything is set on the front end. You know, each of the Disability or Access Center offices on various campuses have their own processes. So I can speak to MSU Denver and kind of Sure. Our process. But that's why I think it's important to reach out to those accessibility offices on campuses early to know what their process is. And so for us, students come in and do what's called an accommodation eligibility appointment. We definitely appreciate if a student has vision loss, and particularly if they're using screen reading technology, that they're letting our staff know that when they're scheduling that first appointment. That just helps, our front desk staff. Rachel, who's at our front desk, is amazing. Helps her to know that it's good to connect the student directly with me. If they get connected to another coordinator, it all works out in the end, but sure, it's just best to get started with the person that you're going to ultimately be working with. And so during that first accommodations eligibility appointment, we're using that. What I tell students is it's not your time to prove to me that you have a disability. It's time for me to really get to know you, get a whole picture of kind of what your needs are and what your accommodation needs are. And it's not always limited to accommodations related to vision loss, right? A lot of our students come in with other diagnoses. You know, there can be health concerns, there can be mental health, there can be, other things going on that also require some thoughtfulness around access and accommodations. And so that first session for us is really helpful. It is longer. You know, some places will have students just fill out an online form and then they'll connect with you and ask for documentation. And it's a little less interactive, but we really ascribe to the accommodation process being an interactive process. So meeting with the student, talking through their needs, asking them lots of questions, asking what worked in the past, what are barriers that they've experienced, how has it been to take an exam? How is it to sit in a class with attentional issues? And kind of just fleshing everything out. And we use that to determine what accommodations a student will need. We always do ask for documentation. I must say with my students with vision loss, often we're a little bit probably more lax with that population in terms of when I'm meeting with a student in my office who has an apparent disability, it can see it, right? And so, often they're like, I'll get you the documentation. Hopefully it rolls in. But we're usually so focused on, okay, let's make sure everything's in place that we're not thinking too hard on that. So, but just getting started with them and figuring out what their needs are early on. So
are there strategies, or can you think of an example? I mean, obviously, not to give anybody's name or anything like that, but just of an example of someone who's come in and you felt like all of the planning and the strategy worked really well for them and they were, very successful.
Yeah, I definitely think when we have students who are reaching out proactively, it's great. And I appreciate that because I'm like, okay, here's someone who's thinking about what their needs are and they're getting things set up and in place. I think it's great when they can talk specifically about kind of what their needs are. So, students who are saying, this is the form, these are the forms of technology or tools that I use. This is what's been helpful. It creates a little bit more confidence and sometimes the student's skill set as well, because I think that's been one of the challenges is that we can put the accommodations in place. We can get the technology pieces, the format, the accessible format, kind of where we want it to be. And then sometimes students, it's hard to flesh out their proficiency with some of the formats, right? So, some students are newer. I mean, we have a lot of students who are newer to vision loss. So even that is an important question sometimes to ask students in terms of have they had vision and lost their vision? Is this recently acquired? Have they done some training with technology, worked with Division of Vocational Rehabilitation or the Colorado Center for the Blind? Really helps us to kind of get a sense, because I think sometimes when it doesn't go smoothly, I mean, you ask, do you know when it goes smoothly? Mm-hmm. But I think the other piece is sometimes at the end of a session with a student wondering, like, ooh, are they as proficient with their screen reader as they're saying they are? Because the content moves quickly, right? And so, not having Braille or tactile skills a deal breaker? No, but it does give another tool in the toolbox. So when you have a student who says, oh yeah, I use JAWS and, you know, I can read Braille and I have used tactile graphics, that opens the door then for us, right, in terms of lots of different options when we're trying to figure out how to create access for a student versus a student who might say, you know, I use JAWS, but I've never used Braille. Again, it's, you know, it's up to students in terms of their choices and those kinds of things. But I would say this of any student, whether they have vision loss or not, is developing and having more tools in that toolbox to pull on.
Right. And you did mention in the last session that you're at least at the Access Center, you're doing all that in-house in terms of you have that Brailler and you're able to provide all those types of services in-house. Yeah. Are there any other tools that you have seen students use? You mentioned the screen readers and the Braille, tactile images. Sometimes it might just be magnification, even, I would guess.
Absolutely. I mean, yes, our students who have some vision are using screen magnification may not be working with me. Like I said, sometimes that's the kind of dividing line. So I definitely work with some students who use screen magnification. But the students, I definitely kind of, we have a more extensive model with, are generally our students using more than magnification who are using screen readers. But magnification is definitely a part of it, right? And, you know, do they have CCTVs or what are they using to magnify? Our testing space has CCTVs in it. We do have the, you know, capacity to do enlarged exams, enlarged text exams. So sometimes that is just figuring out like what level of enlargement is needed and those pieces. It's a lot of it's why it's an interactive process is just, you know, every student is different and every student has some unique needs. And so it's really fleshing out what does that student need for access? What does access look like for this student versus another student?
And if you have a student that comes in and they are using a screen reader, they are using some tools, but they're just learning them. They're newer to vision loss and they're learning tools and maybe those skills aren't as strong as they could be or as would be beneficial as they're in class. Are there resources or places to get additional training that you refer them to?
Yeah, because we don't, our technologist, our assistant director, Ione, does a really great job working with our students related technology, but we don't view ourselves as like
the trainers, right?
Technology trainers, correct? Yeah. I think it's good sometimes, you know, we've had some students who have returned. I can think of a couple students who were students that we would consider to have been sighted students and then have left MSU Denver, come back and been students with vision loss. And so they are adjusting to what it means to be a student who has low vision or is blind for the first time, right? And that's a whole different style of learning. And so I know with the one was actually both that I think of were actually students in the STEM disciplines, so science and math areas, which are very much more reliant disciplines when it comes to visual information. And I know with the one we had some conversations about, maybe I knew math was in our future because they were a math major, but we have to think about that's a lot of content and it can be challenging even for our students who have always been blind and always navigated as a student with a loss of vision, but it's math has been tricky, right? And so
math can be tricky for anyone, I think.
Math can be tricky. I mean, yes, actually, I asked that question in my first appointments, and our question is like, tell me, like, are there concerns with math or the challenges? And I often have to add, as a result of a disability, like, there are just people who are, they're like, math is not my thing, right? And so having those, you know, conversations of, I think sometimes it's beneficial to build a little confidence in your skills and just confidence in you as a student being able to navigate education without your vision, particularly if that's newer for you. And so maybe it would be better to take some of the other courses that are, you know, a little bit more reliant on text-based content and, you know, some maybe a political science course or, you know, something that's more theory-based or reading-based rather than diving into something where you also then have to be figuring out how you're going to hold that content, right? Like mathematical equations or whatever that's going to be. And so I think that's helped students with that transition as they've developed skills. We have a good working relationship with the Colorado Center for the Blind, and we're very fortunate that they're, you know, in the Denver area. And so, you know, they've brought their student cohorts out. Usually as they're kind of have a new group of students, they make a point of coming to our office. And we do just a session, like a question and answer session for their students. And I've had at least one student who was facing vision loss and decided to take time off to go and get the training for her to be successful. And then she came back and hardest working student I know. I she's amazing. And it was hard to take time off of, you know, her plan for college. But I think ultimately it might have actually saved her semesters of struggle because she had the skills. Had some students work with the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. I know that some students have mixed feelings on how long it can take to get connected and services, but they can often be a really great supplier as well of technology, right? Making sure a student has a Braille note or, you know, refreshable Braille displays and JAWS and get some training on those things. So those have been the go-tos in terms of training. I mean, you all might know more about kind of options as well in the community. But yeah, I think those have been the big places where we've seen some students come out of and getting some training.
Thanks for sharing that. How important is it for students to build a support network? Because we've been talking about they're working with you, like who should be included in that network? That it seems like it is important. They're not just out there on their own trying to figure it out.
Yeah. I definitely think when we look at college retention rates and like students completing college and those kinds of things, regardless of kind of who they are, there's a lot of research to support just even having one person that you know on campus boosts retention greatly, right? So I always have conversations with my students about your professors. It's not scary. They're there. They have faculty office hours for a reason. And a lot of students are very comfortable maybe interpersonally. So that's a great place to develop that support system because your professors can give you guidance, right? On not only your course of study, but as you get into your major, they might be your first points of contact for opportunities that are going to enhance your career opportunities down the road. So it may be doing research with them. It may be them thinking of you when someone's reaching out for an internship or a student that they want to bring on. I think the support system is important, right? I stress to my own children, and my students that I work with, go to the tutoring center, go early, use these resources so you start to get to know these people. Because as the semester goes on and more students start to maybe panic about how they're doing, those resources kind of get inundated and it's harder to form those connections. So, definitely I try to make myself available as well as the accessibility coordinator for my students of, you know, I don't mind if you shoot me an email, even if it's not disability related or accommodation related. It could be a question about student employment or something else on campus. It can be does MSU Denver have this? I've been here long enough to know, do we or do we not? Mm-hmm. I have maybe maybe it's easier for me to find an answer and point you in a direction than it is for you to be spinning your wheels or deciding I don't know. And so I'm just not going to do anything, which I think sometimes is a default for some students of right. That seems like a lot of work. Right. So, but yeah, I think building a support system is really good. I think our, you know, while I do a lot of the coordinating for our students who are blind or have low vision, they get very connected with our assistant director, Ione, because Ione's responsible for the content, right? And she's the go-to if you are, you get through something and you're like, this is not making sense, or it's not reading in the order I need, Ione can fix it. And so a lot of our students really rely on Ione pretty closely, right? To make sure that content is there. So good working relationships with our office, I think, is good. We have a few students, you know, we're always confident. They're always in communication. We know things are going well. We have a few that we wish would communicate a little bit better, because sometimes faculty say, oh, the student's been struggling. And we're like, we aren't hearing anything from them. So we're going to assume all is good otherwise. So, yeah.
Right. Yes, because you could connect them if, you know, if they needed other services or mental health support or any of those things.
Right.
So not to hesitate. I'm also thinking about, I'm just thinking about the whole college experience. So obviously, yes, you have your classes and your major and that focus, but then there's also, you know, other clubs and organizations and friends and some of that, of course, isn't organized, but some of it is organized on campus. Are you able to help, I don't know if accommodations would necessarily fit into that, but just help students to know if they have particular interests, like what is available on campus that might, where they might, you know, find friends and have peers within that support network?
Yeah, any college campus you visit, and when you talk to student activities or whatever the office is that kind of oversees the different opportunities on campus to connect, you'll often hear things like there's 90 different student clubs and organizations. Yeah. And I think there's always lots out there for students to do. MSU Denver, I think, it tends to skew to be more commuting students. And so sometimes those students are like, come and get it done and leave, which is unfortunate because we have so many great resources and supports on campus and events and activities to take advantage of. I think there's a lot of opportunities to connect around like social interest and, you know, the rec center and doing like physical stuff and hiking and all sorts of activities there. I think a lot of students connect with other students within their majors, and a lot of the academic departments have student clubs and organizations. Student employment is a great option as well. And so many of the students that we work with, many of our students who have vision loss have been student employees on campus, including working in the office of the president or, you know, working for faculty members on research. One of my students was an environmental science major and worked very closely with one of her faculty on research and was involved in like the student kind of research event to kind of show off the research she had been working with. You know, students sometimes connect with other students with disabilities. So I know there is a Colorado Association of Blind Students that students participate in. And I've worked with on a few events. A lot of our students are working with the National Federation for the Blind and the Colorado chapter and have, you know, received scholarships through that, but are also using that as a point of connection to kind of talk with other students who might or have the same kind of needs or kind of experiences. So yeah, lots of ways to connect. And I really encourage students. I think sometimes students can kind of want to play school in just that little box and then everything else. But it really, the more connected you are, there's a lot of support that helps students to be more successful in college. So, you know, putting yourself out there is a great opportunity.
And even making connections that may be a benefit to you after graduation too.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can. It's never too early to go to career services, right? You might be a first-year student in college. It doesn't hurt to start working on that resume and starting to just have someone support you, because I think the other wonderful thing about supports on college campuses is, yes, there's some fees associated that are in that tuition bill, that very big tuition bill often for some places. Right. That means that most of the services on campus, though, when you go to use them, are free. So career services is free. Our mental health services on campus are free. So students can do individual therapy. They can do group therapy. They can go to a workshop on stress management. They can take Zumba classes. All of these are things that later in life, you're going to have a gym membership and have insurance to go to all these resources. Our health center is doing nutrition counseling. And so, just reminding students to take advantage of everything, because this is probably one of the only times in life where there is going to be so many supports that it's sometimes going to feel like there's just too much, or you're not even going to know what exists. Right. So, yeah.
Right. Well, and I can see, even like you mentioned, going early to the employment service center, that could help shape what work experiences you pursue, you know, like in school. There might, if you're going into the area of science, well, maybe knowing that you could be a research assistant and that could be part of your work experience, you know, could be really helpful. So, and right. I think some of those things, there's so much that folks don't always think about that, because there's just so much that's available that maybe people don't know about. Well, Melissa, you've given us so much information. Is there any final thoughts or words that you would like to give to our listeners as either they or perhaps their children are heading to college?
I feel like so many thoughts, right? as a mom of one college bound, one's about to start his senior year of college, and then just working, and my whole career has been college students, and I love this population because it is such a great, exciting time when students are just figuring out who they are and who they're going to be, and it's going to shift a million times. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't go smoothly, and even seeing some students that come back after some struggles, right? It's just, there's no normal, typical version, I think, of kind of the college experience, but it is just really enjoyable. For me, it always comes back to just knowing yourself, being a good, strong self-advocate, really developing your communication skills. Students can, my students who are well skilled with their social skills and communication, it goes far, and having conversations with faculty, being able to ask for assistance, developing meaningful relationships with peers and with professors and staff on campus. So all of those things are just wonderful. I think having a good balance in life and being able to manage stress, and some semesters are more difficult. Sure. And some are going to be really nice semesters, right? And sometimes right. The ones that you thought were going to be easy or not. I mean, I went to Colorado College. I thought my, block when I was going to take an art class was going to be the most relaxing thing, and no one saw me for that class period. It was hugely stressful. I have a huge appreciation for people who work as artists now. Everything, what did I learn? And sometimes that's what I talk to students about when they've struggled with a semester. Okay, what did we learn from this semester that we can take into our next experience? Maybe it was a teaching style that didn't fit. Maybe, what were some of the red flags that maybe they saw earlier, or, the students who I'm like, okay, we were meeting and you were telling me everything was good, and then all of a sudden it wasn't good. And they're like, yeah, because it wasn't good, but I didn't tell you that. Okay, what did we learn from that, right? And what did we learn in our relationship with each other that, like, got in the way of you being more open about that this is, I'm struggling this semester. So I think that's, you know, there's always a life lesson. So
yes, definitely. Well, and communication, I think, is always key in so many areas of our life. So that's always a good thing to learn.
Yeah, it's a common thing, actually, when I do have opportunities to meet with students and professors, and sometimes that is in a time when a student might be struggling and we're talking about options. And sometimes then a student will kind of break down, like, these are the things I've been experiencing, or this is what I've been struggling with. And the faculty member, the thing I often hear them say is, I wish I had known that sooner. Because often at that point when it's coming out, it can sometimes be too late to do anything. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Right.
The first question I'm always going to ask a student when they're struggling is, have you talked to the professor?
Great. Well, thank you again, Melissa, for being on the program and doing these two episodes with us. Folks can find those on all the major podcast platforms, of course, on our website. So you can go back if you didn't hear last week's, or if you want to listen again to something. There was a lot of information, so you might want to listen to this episode again as well. But thank you, Melissa. I wish you all the best as you go into this next school year. It's always exciting when things are starting up again. And thank you all for tuning in and for listening. We always appreciate if you give us comments or subscribe to our podcast. That's always helpful to us. And you can also contact us through our website, which is www.aftersight.org. We look forward to you joining us again next week. And as always, we hope this has helped you navigate your life with vision loss.